taking shelter of insatiable lust and absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige. The demoniac thus illusioned are always sworn to unclean work, attracted by the impermanent. Reading from the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is entitled The Divine and the Demoniac Natures. Krishna herein is explaining the qualities that within the age of Kali Yuga are very much mixed within everyone's hearts. Our eternal nature is divine. We are all part of Krishna. We are all of the same spiritual substance as Krishna. It is said in Chaitanya Charitamrita that pure love of Krishna is within the heart of every living being. But it is covered. It is covered by forgetfulness of our eternal and true identity as being Krishna's eternal servants. And in that forgetfulness, we want to enjoy separate from Krishna. We want to live independent of the will of Krishna. And this condition is the cause of all suffering. Although the basic principle of our consciousness is that we seek enjoyment, we do not understand what real enjoyment is. This is called ignorance or Maya. Srila Prabhupada defined that Maya means that which is not. What we think is the cause of pleasure is actually the seed of pain. And what we think is the cause of pain is actually the seed by which the flower of real enjoyment will blossom. Human life is meant for tapasya. Sapo divyam putra kayena sadvam sudhyedyasam brahma sokyam tvanantam. Tapasya means the willingness to forego, to put aside our egoistic pursuits for selfish pleasure, for a higher principle, for pleasing Krishna. Pleasing Krishna in the beginning often means to deny ourselves of what our mind and senses are expecting. The mind is such a thing that we have trained and conditioned it from so many births, like a spoiled child, to always get its way. And under the dictation of the five senses, the mind is constantly dragging our consciousness to lower and lower stratums. You see, in the animal civilization, the living entity simply follows the dictations of the senses in the mind with no power to discriminate. The animals are slaves of their mind and senses. They have no power to question or to resist. And they spend their lives eating, sleeping, mating, and defending without question. And oftentimes, the spirit soul has to transmigrate through millions of such lower species before it comes to this human form. So we can understand just how we are conditioned, to what extent, to surrendering to our mind and our senses. And in this age of Kali Yuga, there's really, virtually, very little difference between the human species and the animals. Because in this age of Kali Yuga, people have no inclination toward renunciation or detachment. They are not taught how to control their mind and senses. In fact, they are taught, they are trained how to surrender to their mind and senses as the goal of life. In our educational institutions, we find sometimes our children, their spiritual propensities are slaughtered by the propaganda all around them. They are asked to perform so much tapasya in the form of studies, but the goal of their studies is the promise of greater sense enjoyment. Control your mind and senses now so that you can enjoy better in the future. So you can have the best possible material opulences to exploit. Guru Maharaj explained, the educational institutions these days are like spiritual slaughterhouses. There's so much bad association. Just teaching us how to perpetuate the same inclinations we have cultivated for millions of births as animals, to be the enjoyers. But human life is meant for self-realization. But we can understand how it is not surprising that our mind and senses are so difficult to control. Millions of births as animals, the soul surrendered to that tendencies. And through so many previous lives in this human species, just being trained and conditioned like the animals to be enjoyers of our mind and senses. And then we come to Krishna consciousness and we hear Bhagavad Gita, and Krishna tells us that we are all wrong, that our whole existence and our whole civilization is based on an illusion, a mistake. But somehow or other, this is the situation we're in. And as Guru Maharaj used to say, we must make the best use of a bad bargain. Kalo Shudra Sambhave. People in the age of Kali are born like Shudras, in the sense, at the most, no culture. And even the so-called culture that we find is the culture of animals. We find in the so-called cultured societies of the world, they have so many refineries by which they enjoy the same pleasures as the animals. Advancement in civilization begins when we search for that spiritual platform of consciousness in which we could transcend the repetition of birth and death. Tani sarvani samyamya yukta asita matpara vasehi asyindriyani tasya pragya prajishtata. We must restrain our senses from those things which are not favorable for devotion to God. And we must somehow or other perform the austerity of engaging our senses in those activities which are favorable. So sometimes devotees think, why, even after practicing devotional activities, for many years, still my mind and senses are restless, and I have very little inclination to chant the holy names of God, very little inclination to dance in kirtan, to read the scriptures. We have more inclination to watch the television. We have more inclination to read the newspapers and the magazines than to read the scriptures. We have more inclination to listen to the latest gossip about who did what and where and when than to hear the glories of the Lord's pastimes. Why is this? It is no surprise. It is normal. Because you have been cultivating this for millions of births. And now we have to change our whole conception of reality if we want to take to the real spiritual path. And, needless to say, in this age of Kali, we do not have support from the society. But rather, they will misunderstand, they will criticize. In fact, they will see us as a threat to their Haribo. A threat to our to their complacency for spiritual life. But this is to be expected, and we must be very diligent to understand what are the divine and what are the devaniac properties within ourselves, and to perform the austerity of serving those divine properties and absolutely neglecting, battling against those demoniac qualities. So here, Lord Sri Krishna is explaining how demoniac people, they take shelter of insatiable lust. Or, as the Sanskrit, kaman ashritya. When people are bored, when people are lonely, when people are fearful, when people are in a condition where they need shelter, they take shelter of the thought and the pleasures of sense enjoyment. We see this all around us and within us. People, when they can't sleep at night, in order to find some pacification of their mind, they take shelter of some form of sense gratification, whether it be sex life, gross or subtle, or some other form of mundane entertainment. They have forgotten how to take shelter of Krishna. And it is explained that they are absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige. Please excuse me, but this
the voice can only do so much before it starts becoming like this. In this regard, there's a beautiful story
which shows the extent that pride and prestige can illusion a person's consciousness. When Krishna was living physically in this world, in Brijbhumi, Vrindavan, one night, it was a beautiful night, in the forest, Krishna and Balaram began to have wonderful, wonderful pastimes with the damsels of Braja, the gopis. Tonight, we are in such a charming atmosphere. Very cool breezes, the light of the moon and the stars above, auspicious trees and flowers, and nice green soft grass to sit upon. It's a very charming atmosphere. But you can imagine how charming it was in the beautiful land of Vrindavan. On this moonlit evening, Krishna, Balaram and the gopis were enjoying dancing together, and there was beautiful fragrant breezes from the Malati flowers. And Krishna and Balaram, intoxicated by love, they began to sing melodious songs. And as they were singing, the vibration was so ambrosial that it utterly intoxicated the gopis with bliss. At that time, one of the associates of Kuvera appeared on the scene. His name was Shankasura. And he was, as an associate of Kuvera, from the same community, we can say, he was very, very wealthy, tremendous wealth, and extremely influential. And because of this, he became very proud. It is the nature of this world. The more we have, the more we are under the illusion that we are the enjoyers, because the more we have the power to enjoy. Krishna is the proprietor and the enjoyer of everything. And the more we accumulate in this world, the more we come under the illusion that I am the proprietor and I am the enjoyer. So wealth and prestige, Queen Kunti said, is a great spiritual disqualification. Unless we are extremely cautious, guided by very, very saintly association, we'll be victimized by what we are so hard working to attain. So Shankasura was like that. He had a beautiful jewel, precious jewel, that he would wear on his head, and it was shaped like a conch shell. That is why he was called Shankasura. And when he saw Krishna and Balaram with these beautiful, beautiful gopis of Braja, he naturally thought that these gopis should be enjoyed by me. Srila Prabhupada explains that people too much intoxicated by too much wealth and prestige, they cannot tolerate somebody else enjoying what they want. They think that all beautiful things, and especially beautiful women, should be for their enjoyment. We find this was the condition of Ravana also. Ravana was a very wealthy man.
He had an entire kingdom which was made out of gold. And whatever he wanted, he would attain. But was he satisfied? In this material world, Krishna explains in Gita, that material desire, kama, is like fire. And the more fuel you feed a fire, the more the fire becomes outrageously hungry for more. It's never satisfied. It's never satiated. The more we have, the more we want. The more we acquire, the more we need to maintain what we have. It's an endless, vicious cycle. You know the story of the sage who was sitting on the bank of Ganga in his meditation. And he had nothing except one extra loincloth. And he would bathe in the river, and he would put his loincloth on the side of the bank of the river to dry. But every day a little mouse would come and start to eat the cloth. Somehow or other, mice like cloth. Srila Prabhupada once told us that when one of his relatives had a cloth shop and rats were coming, rats and mice, to eat the cloth. So what to do? So Prabhupada said, oh, they are coming to eat the cloth? Why don't you just put a big plate of rice out every day and they'll eat the rice instead? Because rice costs less than cloth. That will solve your problem. So he did, and they would eat the rice and leave the cloth. But this man, all he had was cloth. So the mouse was eating his cloth. So he asked one of his friends, who was supposedly very wise, what should I do? He's disturbing my meditation. I'm trying to be in samadhi, and I'm thinking about this mouse eating my cloth. Oh, that's simple. You should get a cat. The cat will chase the mouse away. And then you can meditate in peace. So he got a cat. And sure enough, the first day he was meditating in peace, there were no mice. But then, the cat was clawing him and pawing him. So he went back to the wise man. This cat is a greater disturbance than the mouse. Of course, because the cat needs milk. You have to feed the cat milk. So if you want to meditate nicely, you should simply get a cow and get the milk from the cow and feed the cat, and he'll keep the mouse away. Yes, this makes sense. So he milked his cow, and he fed the cat, and the cat guarded his loincloth, and he sat in meditation. Cow. He went back to the wise man. This cow is disturbing my meditation. It's because the cow wants somebody to milk her. Why don't you just get married and have a wife, and the wife will milk the cow, and then she'll feed the cat, and the cat will keep the mouse away, and you can meditate in peace. Yes, yes, of course. Good advice. So he got married, and he had a nice wife, and she milked the cow very faithfully every day.
And she fed the cat. And the cat scared the mouse away. And he was peacefully meditating for some time. And then, "Why don't you get a job? You lazy bum. You expect me to live on this riverbank for the rest of my life? You think I left my father's house for this? Who do you think I am? I want a sari. I want bangles. I want nice food." So he went to the wise man. He said, "Now what should I do?" He said, "You have to get a job. After all, you're married. You can't be an irresponsible grihasta. You have to be gainfully employed and work." So he got a job. And he was working 9 to 5. And then he came home. And by that time, the cow had so many calves, and the wife had so many demands. So he realized that I made a big mistake. The more you have in this world, the more you have to work to serve what you have. We're thinking that the more we have, the more those things will serve us. But it's just the opposite. We become the servant of that. And so many complications. So, one day he just left. And he took his second loincloth and he just threw it away. He threw it in the river. And he sat down and felt, yes, better to meditate in a wet loincloth than to go through all of that again. So Shankasura, he had great, great, tremendous wealth. And he was from such a high realm of society. He was actually from the heavenly abodes. Kuvera, the treasure of the demigods. So although he had so much, when he saw the beauty of the gopis, nothing gave him any satisfaction unless he had them too. Isn't it amazing? However much you have, when there's something you want, you don't think about how much I have. You only think about what I don't have. How I cannot be happy without this. Huh? Instead of thanking Krishna, "Thank you for all that you've given me," you're just praying to Krishna, "Give me something else. There's no peace without that." And we work like an ass for that. And then when we get it, we get tired of it soon, and then we want something else. This is material life. Sukha dukkha da, happiness, distress, non-permanent appearance. So Sankasura was thinking out of his intoxication of pride, that I will enjoy these gopis. So right in front of Krishna Balaram, while they were singing and dancing so nicely, he just took the gopis and started leading them in the northern direction, ordering them as they were his own property, as they were his own wives. "You come with me, you go this way." And he started forcing them to go. And he started taking them deeper into the forest. And the gopis are Krishna's property. They exist, they live only for the pleasure of Lord Sri Krishna. They are his devotees. In the same way, we are also aspiring to be devotees of Krishna. we are also aspiring to make our lives exclusively the property of Krishna. But Sankasura comes in so many forms to try to take us away from Krishna. And sometimes, like this mighty demon, this demon was more powerful than the gopis. He was forcing them away. Similarly, sometimes the forces of material energy are trying to take us away from Krishna. Sometimes other people who call themselves our friends are trying to drag us away from Krishna. Sometimes the objects of the senses, the propaganda of material advertising, is diverting our attention away from Krishna. Sometimes the objects of the senses, they are tearing our minds away from Krishna. We want to be enjoyed by Krishna. We're Krishna's property. Why we are being taken away? Forces are always trying to take us away. So the gopis, in this predicament, they began to call out Krishna and Balaram's holy names. Please save us, Krishna, Balaram, they began to call out. In the same way, when our own mind and senses and the various agents of this demonic energy of Kali Yuga try to divert our attention and take it away from Krishna, we must call out his holy names. Because Krishna, he's none different than his names. And not only that, as the Paramatma, he is situated in everyone's heart. And when we call his name, he hears. And he always comes to the rescue of his sincere devotee. So Krishna and Balaram, they picked up logs and they began to run after Sankasura. And Sankasura was leading the gopis farther, farther in the northern direction in the forest. But when he saw Krishna and Balaram running very, very fast with logs in their hands, he realized that they are very strong and they are certain to destroy me. So he left the gopis behind and he ran away for his life. But Krishna wanted to liberate him from his false pride. So Krishna entrusted Balaram with the care of the gopis, and Krishna began to run after Sankasura. And ultimately, Krishna is faster than the fastest. How can anyone escape from Krishna? We try, but it is not possible. Sometimes we try to hide from Krishna. Sometimes we try to run from Krishna. But you cannot, because Krishna happens to be situated in and between every atom. Where are you going to go to escape? Where will you go where there are no atoms? Krishna is everywhere through his various energies. So he was running from Krishna. And Krishna ran, and he caught up with him, and with his fist, he smashed this demon's head, and Sankasura fell to the ground dead. Rio! And then Krishna took with his own hands the conch shell shaped jewel, and he went back and he presented it to Balaram in the presence of all of the gopis. And everyone was very happy. In the same way, if we call for Krishna's help, we should know that he will liberate us. He will liberate us from this demon of pride and exploitation within our hearts. He will protect us the soul, which is his own personal property, eternally his devotee, will be reclaimed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is our aspiration. So unless we understand very clearly the nature of the world we live in, we are certain to be deluded by its potencies. That is why the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita is very essential to understand. There is no question of coming to any higher levels of consciousness unless we learn to control our mind and control our senses. And there's no impetus to do that unless we understand the nature of this temporary existence. The Pandavas were outnumbered by the Kurus on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And similarly, devotees will always be outnumbered by materialistic people in this world. But unless we understand from Krishna how to take shelter of him and why to take shelter of him, we will certainly be defeated. It doesn't take any endeavor to be defeated in this material world. To just be a servant of the mind and senses takes no effort at all. To fulfill the mind and the senses' desires, you have to work like an ass and endure so much frustration. But the principle of accepting servitude is natural in the conditioned state. We have to fight. We have to fight our animalistic propensities. And Krishna explains in Gita, without such fight, there is no such thing as real yoga. We have to be willing to be detached. What does detachment mean? In Krishna's Lila, Krishna once visited the holy place of Mithila, Videha. Has anyone ever been to Mithila? Raise your hand if you have been. It's called Janakpur. It's just north of Bihar. You have been? Huh? Yes, it is in southeastern Nepal. It's a very holy place. It is the birthplace of Sita, the place where Ram broke the bow of Sita, the place of the marriage of Sita and Ram, the place of the whole long dynasty of Maharajas coming down from Nimi. I lived there in 1972. It's kind of strange. I was born in America, and I lived there in 1972, and all of you from India have never been there. And it happens to be one of the most auspicious holy places in India. Anyways, it's a beautiful place. But Krishna went there. Krishna went there about 5,000 years ago. And when he arrived, two of his devotees greeted him. In fact, he went there just to meet his devotees. One was a king. His name was Bahulashwa. And the other was a very poor, gentle Brahmin of the name Shrutadev. And they both came to the outskirts of the town. And Krishna came with so many great saints and rishis along with him. And they both fell at his feet and worshipped him. And they both begged him, "Please come to our home." So for Krishna, there is no problem in satisfying everyone. We are jivatmas.
We have difficulty satisfying anyone, what to speak of everyone. If two people expect something of us, we have to do something for one person and offend another person. Even in spiritual life, sometimes we're in this dilemma. If to make one person happy, I have to offend someone else. But if I make that person happy, I offend the other. Or at least make them feel bad. Devotees naturally want to make everyone happy. But we simply cannot. Huh? If you become a devotee, sometimes relatives, friends, they are very unhappy. Why you are doing this? Why you are a bhakta? You should be a bhukta. So if you try to be a bhukta, then the bhaktas are very offended. Why are you a bhukta? You should be a bhakta. So what to do? You can please some of the people some of the time. You can never please all the people all of the time. But Krishna can please everyone at all times, if he so desires. So he expanded himself into two forms. And he went to Shutadev, the Brahmin's house. And he went to Bahulaswa, the king's house. But the amazing thing is each one of them thought that he has only come to my house. He's nowhere else. He's only with me. He loves me so much. He only loves me. Krishna did the same thing with gopis during Ras Lila. Each gopi was thinking, Krishna's dancing. Of all these gopis, he's chosen me. Such love. And in Dwaraka, when Krishna was living in 16,108 palaces with 16,108 queens, each one was thinking that Krishna's only with me. All the other 16,107 queens are just waiting for Krishna, but he's with me and he never leaves me. But actually he was with all of them simultaneously. How is this possible? Because he's Krishna. Because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's unlimited in his potencies and his opulences. He has achintya, inconceivable shakti or energies. In the same way, Krishna went to both of their homes, and Bahulaswa brought him into his beautiful royal palace and gave Krishna and the great saints and sages very luxurious sitting places, sumptuous feasts of prasad, and playing wonderful musical instruments. And the king washed his feet and sprinkled the water on the heads of all of the family members and began to give gifts to Krishna and the sages. He was giving beautiful jewelry and cows and precious cloths. In this way, he completely satisfied Krishna and his devotees by his love. And meanwhile, Shutadev, he just lived in a little hut. He was a very poor Brahmin. He was satisfied. He was grihastha, but he was just satisfied with whatever would come of its own accord. He was never greedy. So his wife cooked some rice, and he went and he picked some nice flowers, and he offered it to Krishna. And he didn't have so many entertainers, so he danced in front of Krishna and waved his cloth around. And he massaged Krishna's feet and washed his feet and sprinkled the water on the heads of himself and his family members. And Krishna was equally pleased with both of them. They both offered such heartfelt, genuine, and sincere prayers. And the moral to this story is Krishna is not concerned with what you have or how much you have. Nor is he concerned with how much you don't have. Whether you're a king living in a palace or whether you're very simple, barely subsisting on the basic necessities of life, Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachchati.
If you serve Krishna with love, he is satisfied. It is his only concern, the quality of our love, the quality of our devotion. So we must learn to revive our real spiritual nature. We must be willing to fight against infatuation, pride, and endless longings for our own personal interests. We must learn how to come to the pure state of consciousness or Krishna consciousness. That is the meaning of human life. And to the degree people are aspiring in this direction, we are living in a civilization. However beautiful our clothes and our cars and our scientific technology is, if we are not pursuing the purification of our consciousness and self-realization, we are living in an uncivilized world. So Bhagavad Gita is giving us very important, essential toward real happiness, toward the transcendental bliss that the soul is longing for. And when we come together like we are tonight to hear topics of the Absolute Truth, when we live pure lives, no intoxication, no unnecessary slaughter of animals to eat their flesh, no gambling, no illicit relationships with the opposite sex. When we live by these basic codes of morality, we associate with devotees, and we take the cleansing process, the supremest cleansing process of chanting Krishna's names and hearing Krishna's glories, then we become truly civilized. Then we are making real progress in our life. And this is the greatest need, individually and collectively. So we are very grateful to all of you, ladies and gentlemen, this evening, for coming and joining us. It is the most important aspect of our life. Do not take it as a fashion. Do not take it as just another form of entertainment. Coming to the satsang of devotees to hear and chant the glories of the Lord and take Krishna's prasad is the supreme most function and responsibility of every human being. And without this, we can progress to nothing more than sophisticated animals in our life. Haribo, thank you very much. But if we do accept this most priceless treasure of bhakti, we become most fortunate. Who is the person with real wealth? The person who knows Krishna. Who is the person with real fame? The person who knows Krishna. All opulences are in Krishna. And the only opulence of this world, real opulence, is to love Krishna. Without that, we are in poverty. And there can be nothing but poverty without Krishna. Poverty of the heart.
As far as the body goes, we can decorate ourselves nicely, but in a few years we die and we're put on a funeral pyre and there's nothing left of any of our riches. But the wealth, real wealth, is wealth of the heart, when Krishna is always manifesting. When we remember Krishna, we have the greatest treasure, the greatest wealth, the greatest fortune. So let us always chant his holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama.